With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's Sunday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Bolwood, and the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Oh, welcome back, Adam. I've returned to the glorious England after a victorious trip away in Lille.
How was it?
It was a lot of fun, yeah. They went to the Switzerland-Albania game, really good atmosphere there, really friendly, both sets of fans. The Albania fans were brilliant, the Switzerland fans were good. Game was a good game, to be quite honest, good game of football, red card, a goal. A lot of drama at the end, obviously, with that big chance that was missed by Albania to equalise, to draw the game. And generally in Lille, we had a really good time. Lille's quite a nice city. It's quite picturesque, and went out for it on a few nights out in this sort of, I think it was called Red Street, Rouge something. That was excellent. A place called Le Network, if you're in Lille, go and check it out.
That's your recommendation, is it?
Yes, nice. That and a place called Basecamp. Both were very, very fun.
So you didn't see any of the much-reported violence, or you weren't involved in it either, Dave?
No, I'd never be involved in anything like that.
Of course
not. That's silliness.
Of course
not. So we basically were in Lille, and it was fine, absolutely fine. But then Germany-Ukraine was this evening, obviously, and that was in Lille. So the atmosphere today was a little bit different. Like, it was fine during the day, but sort of you kind of like felt a little bit on edge when we were walking to the train station. So we basically sat in a bar pretty much all the day watching the football, having a few beers, a few Belgian lagers, which were delicious. And then we saw out the window, we heard a bang, and then we saw like all these riot police like gearing up, getting all their kit on, like a guy with the tear gas going. And it was in a square that we'd walked through, basically walked through a square about in the morning, probably around 2 o'clock. And it was good atmosphere. There was loads of, German fans, Ukrainian fans, just in this, in the big, I think it's called the Grand Platz or whatever it was. And apparently that's where the violence kicked off. It was like, so if we were there a little bit later, we potentially could have got caught up in it. But I don't know, it's just stupidity and it's things that need to stop. England, obviously, whatever they've done, Russia and Germany and the Ukraine today, it's just silliness, really. It's stupid.
It's a really bizarre situation. I think most people are obviously shocked by what they're seeing, because I don't think we're expecting this level of violence, really. I know, of course, when you have international football tournaments and lots of fans from different countries coming together, everyone's going to have a drink, of course, and they're going to try and have a good time. But the violence itself is shocking, really. I mean, UEFA now have threatened to disqualify both England and Russia from the tournament if there is any further violence from fans. Probably the most shocking incident was last night after the England game. Russia fans appearing to sort of rush at England supporters, sort of breaking through the stewards, as it were, into the England end, attacking England fans. England fans themselves involved in skirmishes with Russian fans and police earlier in the day in Marseille. It's not exactly an edifying depiction of fans, it has to be said. And, the fans have obviously got the blame to take as well, but UEFA, in terms of the security, have also got questions to answer.
I think it's there's two sort of points there. One, a lot of the violence in Marseille was to do with ultra groups attacking the England fans, and the England fans, singing horrendous songs about things, and it kicking off there. I think the policing's a bit of an issue. I feel that they're really geared up for a terrorist attack. Like, there were like armed police around Lille and Lens, where we watched the game in Lens. That's where the actual football was. There were loads of armed police, horses, and that type of thing. But it just feels like the football violence that we saw in this country that in the 80s that was crushed by really good policing, it feels like they haven't taken the same thing. Like, a really good example, so we jumped off the train. We got the Eurostar back from Lille today into London, King's Cross St Pancras. And There were police officers holding up signs saying, "Have you been to Lille? Have you been to watch football?" So I jumped off the train and I was like, you know, obviously we didn't go to the England game. We haven't been in Marseille. And apparently that this female police officer was saying that there's been four British guys, English guys, that are in a critical condition, and the French police won't investigate it. So they're going to have to investigate it.
It's
mental. And with that as well, so when we jumped off the train, we were getting filmed. So they filmed every single person that got off that train. That's something that the English police have done. I've seen it before going with United away, that they get filmed because they catch the people. You know, they're basically building evidence so they can apply people, you know, they can apply the banning orders and get these people that, quite frankly, don't deserve to be in around football away from the games. So that's something that the French should be doing, things like that. Like, we didn't get filmed at all when we were in France. There just seemed to be no control, whereas they need to do that. Like, why not maybe, you know, pre-tournament, get some of the English police force that have been very good at dealing with this hooliganism problem in the UK over to France just for the tournament? You know, it just seems like they were so with the bit when, you know, where it all kicked off in Lille today, the noise and whatever, the police officer we saw, it looked like a massive overreaction. And quite frankly, there should have been police in that square anyway. There probably was, but there wasn't enough.
It's an interesting one, because obviously you've been on the ground in Lille, admittedly, not Marseille, but you're sort of seeing the stuff there. And the reaction, all the reports we're getting on Twitter and on obviously lots of different news websites, so many differing reports and so many complex and diverse situations. I mean, you talk about ultras, Russian fans, there's reports of French ultras, Marseille ultras, Russian England fans, Russian ultras, Russian England fans, England fans attacking police. And like you say, there has been some criticism for the police firing tear gas into the crowds to disperse them, essentially, has been criticised for almost exacerbating the situation. I would recommend following Ian McIntosh, who, although he's obviously left Marseille now, but he's got a very good account of it, both on his Twitter feed and for different articles he's been writing for ESPN and The Guardian. And he's sort of trying to make the point that it's not all England fans. It is a small minority that are causing trouble. At the same time, you know, those fans are causing problems themselves. But there just seems to be so many issues and so many different factors that have sort of almost lit this powder keg of insanity. Really, it just seems like chaos in the opening days. And you really do need the French police to get a handle on it, and UEFA, really. So we'll see how it develops in the coming days. Of course, that's all the off-the-pitch issues that have been going on. There has been some actual football, though, Dave. Of course, France winning the opening game against Romania. Yesterday, we had Albania losing to Switzerland, as you went to see. Wales winning 2-1 against Slovakia. England disappointing in a 1-0, well, a disappointing 1-0 draw with Russia at today. Let's start on England, Dave, since they're both English. I saw a tweet out at halftime, you know, an impressive first half from England. You didn't seem as enamoured with the performance.
No, I thought England had the ball and created a few chances, but the play was just too slow. It wasn't dynamic. There was a massive issue on that right-hand side where Kyle Walker was so isolated. Lallana was coming too narrow. Sterling was coming too narrow. There was no natural width. When you're playing against a team that's going to sit deep in a low block, you've got to play with width. You've got to open them up wide, which, you know, consequently will open up space in the middle because players will be pulled out into the wide areas. Hence, you know, Wayne Rooney will have more space. And I just felt that England display, it just felt a bit toothless. It felt like they weren't going to win that game. And they had, you know, they did dominate that first half, but they didn't take their chances or they didn't create enough. And I think it's going to be an issue for England and Roy Hodgson. His team is inherently too narrow. And we all know that because there's no natural wingers in there. But then you could still play with wingers with the players that they've got there. You know, you've got to tell them to stay wide.
Do you not think he was looking to Rose and Walker to bring that width? And they did whip in quite a few dangerous balls in that first half.
But then why don't they play a 3-5-2 then? If the width is just going to come from their fullbacks and their two of the front three are going to be very, very narrow, that should be in those wide areas, why not play a 3-5-2 and go with two strikers? You know, England have Harry Kane and Jamie Vardy, who scored 40 plus goals in the Premier League this season. Why not just go with those two up top? A back three of maybe John Stones, Smalling, Cahill. Midfield three of, you know, Rooney, Dier, Dele Alli, and then the two fullbacks and then two strikers up top. That would work, but inherently, I think they won't be able to play that system because they won't understand it. So there's just kind of a bit of an issue here that. The reason why Spurs do so well is because they massively overload that middle space with those three attacking midfielders, get very, very tight to each other. But it does work because they play they press more and they're more direct than this England side. It was just too much dilly-dallying on the ball, and Wayne Rooney not being, you know, when Wayne Rooney was involved in the game, it was really good, but there was like 5-10 minute chunks where he just wouldn't touch the ball. And when he's playing central midfield, he has to touch the ball all the time.
It did feel like quite a Spursy performance in more ways than one. I think some of the good aspects and also some of the bad aspects, it reminded me of Spurs in that, certainly the second half of the season, Spurs used to create a lot of chances in games and looked relatively dangerous going forward, failed to take a lot of those chances and later on paid for it, dropping points, whether it be losing the game or drawing and conceding a late goal. On that late goal from Russia, it was a good goal, has to be said, but how much blame do you think lies with Roy Hodgson? Because he got a lot of criticism for taking off Rooney, who he says was tiring, and for taking off Sterling, who he also said was fatigued, bringing on Milner and Wilshere. Some people accused him of sort of taking the sting out of England, and sort of it went very flat.
Yeah, so what he did there was he just took off the guy that was, you know, Rooney in spells was playing very well and was controlling the game. He's a player that does that for Manchester United week in, week, or has done second half of the season, played in central midfield and been comfortable at seeing games out. You take him off, you know, it's the mentality thing again, and you take him off and he's the leader. But again, like, you're 1-0 up against Russia, you have pacey players on the bench that you could bring on and play on the counter-attack. You bring on Jamie Vardy, he's going to press, he's going to harry, you're going to be able to play him in behind. You bring on someone like Marcus Rashford, again, he's going to be running. And I felt that, you know, with the changes, it just killed England. It took away their fight and the momentum. And, it was coming. That goal was coming and it happened. And it's, you know, it is Roy Hodgson's fault, 100%.
How do you feel going into the Wales game on Thursday then? Because obviously Wales won their opening game against Slovakia. I was quite impressed by the performance, although early second half, it felt like it could have gone either way. Slovakia were making chances. Wales did enough in the end, though. And for all the talk of a one-man team, and we spoke about it beforehand in our previews, being so reliant on Gareth Bale, and obviously the team is centred around Gareth Bale, there were impressive performances from Aaron Ramsey, Ben Davies, and those sort of players.
Yeah, I think Wales were really good. You know, the system looks nice. It plays to their strengths. Again, it's a 3-5-2. I think the 3-5-2 at the moment works very well in world football. They're very comfortable. They're very comfortable at the back. They've got some decent players in there, but they do have Gareth Bale. He is the X factor. He's something that, you know, it is all around Gareth Bale. But then that's good. It's good to have one pivotal point for a team because it's easier to build a team around that. If you have two players that you've got to fit into a system, it's harder to create. We've seen Wolfsburg with De Bruyne in the past doing this similar thing where you build it around one and then everything else sort of comes and clicks together. So I really worry for England. You know, if that Wales team, whether they do want to, control the possession, they can do. And if they want to play on the counter-attack, they could do. And that'd be so, so dangerous. You know, Gareth Bale running out at a back three of Smalling, Cahill and Eric Dier doesn't fill me with confidence. From an England perspective, you know, it's a feel that Wales have got the system down to a T, and England are still, under Roy Hodgson, have still not found the right way yet.
What do you think is going to happen on Thursday? Are you going for an England win, or do you think Wales are going to cause us lots of problems?
I think Wales are going to win when England are going to come third in the group. I think it's one win, you're through. Wales are already through. So, you know, if England did nick a draw, they need one more draw, and then they've got the 3 points. 3 points will probably get you through in this tournament, which is insane. I'm not too keen on the format. I think that it's a bit too easy to get through the group stages.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit easy. It feels almost like a foregone conclusion, which is tempting fate when it comes to England. What about Albania and Switzerland? Obviously, you were there, as you said. I mean, Albania, obviously, that red card sort of killed them. Somewhat unfortunate. Not a convincing victory for Switzerland. But were you impressed by any particular players? Or?
Yeah, so Loxana, who got sent off, was absolutely diabolical for the whole game. For 35 minutes he was on, he was rotten. Really rotten. But Switzerland were good. I quite like the two Albanians on the left-hand side were quite good. I thought the 15 that dropped into centre-back was pretty decent. He played a lot better than Sana did when he was on the pitch. But Switzerland do look like a good team. They've got the best two full-backs in the competition, in my opinion, with Ricardo Rodriguez, who, again, impressed me so much. That's the second time I've seen him live. I went to see Wolfsburg, Hertha Berlin, last season. He was really good in that game. And again, he was so good, so quick, so good on the ball. Press when he sort of, what I like about when he sort of, like, when he's going to press somebody, he'll usually come out with the ball in any situation. So sometimes he was catching the Albanian right back really high up the pitch, and it was really interesting to see that. Granted, Xhaka was brilliant. I thought he had a really, really good game, controlled things in central midfield. His range of passing is pretty decent. Again, with Arsenal, the Arsenal midfield, sorry, going away from the Euros, but kind of doesn't feel like Arsenal have signed the player that they need again. They've signed Granit Xhaka, another really, really good ball player that pretty much you want to play him next to a destroyer. And that would work really well. I thought Barami was really good. He dropped between the centre-backs nicely. Switzerland just played out from the back, and Boulou, when he came on, was really good. But the man up front, Stefanovic, he was absolutely rotten. Couldn't finish the same.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Save his life. It was. I think he had 3 one-on-ones. You know, both goalkeepers did very well. And that Jan Sommer save for the when the Albanian lad went through was brilliant. But I think Mbolo was you know made a really good impact. I think they should start him in the next game. Shaqiri was frustrating as always, but you know had moments of brilliance. So yeah, it was. I think the Swiss team will do all right in the tournament. They're not going to win it. I think they do lack something. They lack a true number nine, someone that's going to score their goals. But they were good. That you know the play was quite nice. It was sort of like how England want to play with their fullbacks, but you know Switzerland were doing it a lot better.
On to today then. The first game up was Turkey v Croatia. Croatia winning 1-0. Cheeky Nando's tweets in saying, "Who are your dark horses of the tournament?" After seeing Croatia today, I was relatively impressed. I think they've got a lot of good players there, a lot of talent, and it all sort of came together for them.
Yeah, I think Croatia were really good. Luka Modric had an absolute wonderful game in central midfield. I thought Rakitic was really good. Rakitic was playing a different role. You know, Rakitic, that he was at Sevilla, played attacking midfield like he does for the national team. And it's nice to see him there again because you forget that he actually is a really, really good ball player. Like when he's got the ball at his feet, he just drifts past people a little bit like Andres Iniesta. So it'll be interesting to see when Iniesta goes, will Rakitic step up into those sort of, you know, that creative mould and they'll get somebody in to do the running. So, yeah, Croatia were really good.
Lovely goal for Modric as well, of course. Is that the best goal of the tournament for you? Arteta assist tweeting in to ask. I've got to say, ooh. Dimitri Payet was
yeah, Dimitri Payet was an absolute banger. Obviously, the Eric Dier free kick was good. But I think, yeah, Payet, I'm going to go with Payet.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
A solid bet. Also, today we had Northern Ireland and Poland. Poland winning 1-0, dominating the match, it has to be said, especially in the first half. Northern Ireland failing to get a decent effort on target. Dave, all to play for in that game against Ukraine on Thursday, and they need a result, really.
They really do. I think they were very, very poor today, but I was really impressed. Being a dark horse question, I'm going to go with Poland. Poland were really good for me. I thought Milik was really, really, really good. Thought he played that second striker role really well. Scored a goal, created two chances, won two out of two of his tackles. Had five shots on goal, really good display. Piszczek was good. Krakowiak was awesome. But the player that really sort of jumped out of there from nowhere was that Kaputska, the lad that played on the left-hand side, 19 years old. But what a talent he was. He looked so confident on the ball, you know, actually went a goal. It was refreshing to see it. You know, a player that I didn't really know anything about sort of just turn it on in this stage. Obviously, he's come into the team because someone else was injured, but he had a cracking game, created two chances, two interceptions, three shots, won three tackles, and 39 passes. So yeah, some good performances there from Poland. I thought they were good, and I feel that they will kill people on the counter attack. Obviously, in this game they had to play with the ball because they're playing against a weaker opponent. But on the break, they've got so much pace, and Lewandowski, obviously the man to bring that all together. Who didn't have the greatest of games today. You know, he was good, but it wasn't vintage Lewandowski. I thought he was outshined by the two lads that I mentioned just before. So yeah, I think this Polish side are going to be good.
Elsewhere in Group C, Germany winning 2-0 against the Ukraine. Lovely goal from Mustafi, lovely header. Bastian Schweinsteiger capping it off, but it looked a little bit shaky. Jerome Boateng had to make a pretty spectacular clearance off the line to keep the lead for Germany, while Manuel Neuer made a couple of good saves to keep them in it. Tweet a question coming in on Twitter here, Dave, saying, why do you think we've not seen... Sorry, let me ask that again. Question here on Twitter from Gloop. Gloop the Dragon. Nice. Said, still not seen any side so far who I thought looked the real deal. Germany, France and England are vulnerable defensively. Do you think that's just teams sort of, you know, shaking off any rust, just getting into it, essentially?
Yeah, I think it's a bit nervy, isn't it? First game's always nervy at a tournament. But, yeah, I've been surprised how teams that have taken one goal leads haven't gone on to, you know, score two, three goals. You know, Germany's the first time that we've, you know, seen a team... more convincing, I'd say, Germany was. You know, Poland, is when they had the one goal, didn't kill off Northern Ireland. You know, England didn't kill off Russia. But I think it's the consistency and these players are going to come together. Obviously, France had to score, a wonder goal to bail France out. So I think it's just the tournament is coming on, isn't it? And these players, obviously, sort of getting competitive again. Obviously, the friendlies before the tournament aren't the most competitive of games. So, yeah, I think it's just going to take time for these guys to hit their rhythm.
Yeah. Richard B. LFC tweeting and saying, why do you think there's been a lack of goals so far at a tournament? It does seem to be because, as you say, there's those nerves there around the first games.
Yeah.
13 goals in seven games so far. So not the highest scoring. Germany, the only team to win by a margin of more than one goal so far. Elsewhere on the Twitter, the questions coming in. Adam Boatwood.
Boatwood?
Yeah.
Are you joking?
Another lovely fake Twitter account. No team has beaten another convincingly. All teams are more or less even. Very interesting tournament so far. Jay Necker on Twitter said, best midfield passing display so far.
I think Switzerland were really good. I think Xhaka was awesome. Obviously, Toni Kroos this evening was pretty good. I thought Krajovac, really controlled the game. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Switzerland. Really, really impressed with how they were. Some of the moves that they were putting together, very intricate, like 4, 5, 6 passes. They're all one-touch passes and, you know, lovely diagonal breaking the lines up. Luka Modric, obviously, as well, was really good today in central midfield. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Switzerland. But I think there's been some good standout performances from central midfield so far in the tournament, which is good.
Not going to mention Wayne Rooney there, Dave.
Nope, I'm not, Adam.
HJD Cornish said, do you think the fan reaction to the England performance is too rash, or do we have serious problems? I think what side of the fence are you going to come down on that one, Dave?
I think it's quite funny. One of my mates, one of the lads I went to Lille with, said today, like, it's kind of an interesting point he raised. It was sort of like, you know, England fans are always inherently negative. No matter what happens, England fans are always going to be negative. And I think that's kind of true in a way, isn't it?
There was a lot of appreciation, I think, for England in the first half because of the way they played, although you might not have been the biggest fan.
No.
I think people were impressing the England team playing relatively well. In the second half, it took a while to get going for England, but they did have a few good chances. That Rooney chance, which forced a really impressive save from Akinfeev, I want to say.
Yeah, but again, you've got to be putting that in the corner.
Yeah, of course.
It's one of Rooney's weaknesses of his game is that situation. Happens for United quite a lot that he always seems to drill it. You know, it always seems to go down the middle straight to the goalkeeper, and obviously. It was a good save, but it was savable, you'd say.
That last-minute goal, though, just took all the good feeling away, though. It just felt so disappointing. You could see some of the players collapse on the pitch at the end. So disappointing to lose that way.
Mm.
But I think, you know, I'm relatively confident we can get a good result against Wales, hopefully beat them, because they did look susceptible against Slovakia, and hopefully that can sort of get our campaign off to a bit more of an optimistic start, really. Because it's been a little bit muted, I'd say, after last night. Here's an interesting one from Gabriel Woots. He said, Pjanic to Juventus thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I know, this hasn't been confirmed yet, but there are reports that he's going for a medical tomorrow. A £30 million clause triggered by Juventus, set to sign in the next week, apparently. You've obviously spoken before of your love for Miralem Pjanic, Dave. Do you think it's a good move for him?
Yeah, well, Juventus has been looking for a number 10 for probably 2 years since Allegri came in. You know, they've been with Isco, they've been linked with Kevin De Bruyne. There's been loads of number 10s, James Rodriguez. But yeah, Pjanic would fit in really well in this Juventus team. Give them another element in their midfield. You know, you've got the likes of Mauricio Pogba, Pjanic. That's a pretty decent midfield. If that was how it fit. But I kind of think that Pogba should be moving into that attacking midfield role. So... It's an interesting one, but again, Pjanic has come out and said before, you know, we don't know how truthful this is, but he said that he doesn't want to move to Juventus because he's got his connections with Rome. We want to leave Italy, and the, you know, the Roma fans are definitely with that. So I hope he doesn't go to Juve just because it will kill his relationship with the Roma fans, being a, you know, romantic, but it will be a good move for him and it will take his career to that next level.
Finally, then, looking ahead to tomorrow's games, is the Republic of Ireland versus Sweden in Group E and Belgium versus Italy, also in Group E, of course. I'm going to be on the TFR Live with Lawrence hosting this one, so make sure you tune in. Dave, though, what do you make of this one? Because it's such an exciting group, the group of death, as it's called, Republic of Ireland v Sweden. It's the one game where you feel like Republic of Ireland could get a result. It's a great way to kick off their campaign, potentially. Fuck me, I can't even speak. It's a great way to kick off their campaign, potentially.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a good start for them. I feel this, again, I mentioned before in the pod that 3 points will get you through. So this is a big, big game for the Republic of Ireland, but also a big, big game for Sweden. I've tipped Sweden to be the dark horses in our preview, so I still believe that. I think, you know, Zlatan in form at the moment could terrorise anybody, any defence in the world, any centre-back. You know, playing up against Zlatan in this form, it would be, you know, it would be afraid. So I think there'll be too much for Ireland.
That is a shame. That's a bloody shame.
Big shame. I apologise to everyone, all the Ireland fans out there.
I'm hoping. Jonathan Walters looks like he may be available. He pulled up an injury on Saturday. Martin O'Neill saying he's hoping Robbie Keane and James McCarthy are available, despite their injuries, which would obviously be a big boost. Well, Robbie Keane's arguable. finally, Belgium v Italy. That's the evening game. The biggest game of the day, has to be said. I mean, how do you see that one going? Eden Hazard limped out of training, but he's expected to be fit to face Italy.
Oh, it could be, you know, it's like, that could be a bit of a game change, you know, if they do lose one of their stars. Because for me, that's a positive thing for Belgium, because there's too many at the moment. I feel like you've got to throw one of those out to get the best out of that side, make, you know, build a team around De Bruyne or Hazard, but not have both of them in there. I just don't think it doesn't work for me. But I feel that it's going to be Italy sitting deep, counter-attacking. I really want to see Insigne up front with Pella. That'd be good. A bit of Candreva on the right-hand side, Ferenzi in there, that back three that we all love, and Buffon. So, yeah, it's going to be a good game. I think Italy are going to win that one.
Interesting reports that Italy might start with Antonio Candreva and Stefan El Shaarawy as attacking wing-backs.
Bloody hell.
What do you make of that?
That's really ballsy.
That is bold. I like that from Antonio Conte.
Yeah, that would be very, very bold. But Conte's that type of guy. You know, we've spoke about the 3-3-4 before. Maybe he's pulling it out.
I'm hoping for a big performance from Belgium, essentially, because I know we're talking about, you know, the first game is a nervy affair and they need to sort of shake any rustiness out of their system. We saw that with France in the opening game. But I'm hoping Belgium live up to that tag. You know, we're all expecting them to go to at least the semis.
They won't.
But they won't, apparently. Finally, Spain. Czech Republic, Dave. Big things expected of Spain, looking for that third European Championship in a row.
Yeah, I think they'll be decent. I think Nolito's the man to watch out for on that left wing, cutting in. He'll be the goal scorer, I reckon, for them. You know, going to be interesting that game. The Czech Republic, they don't have the greatest of squads anymore. I think Dockel's probably their best player, created, I think, the second most chance in the Europa League this season. So look out for him. But I think apart from that, they don't have much depth and much quality these days.
Vicente Del Bosque hinting David De Gea is likely to start in goal, despite all the controversy surrounding the alleged scandal, I should say. Probably on the pitch, he should be their starting goalkeeper, has to be said.
Yeah, 100%. It's got to be David De Gea for me over Casillas. Casillas, again, didn't have the greatest seasons at Porto. They were quite poor. You know, it was one in Sporting and Benfica were the top two over in Portugal. So, yeah, I'd definitely start De Gea over Casillas.
He's denied all the claims, it should be said. Obviously, if they are true, then
God.
Then I despair, to be frank.
Yeah, same.
It's a pretty bleak situation.
What's the world coming to?
On that light and happy note, guys, thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you make of the Euros so far on Twitter. Tweet us at the front three with the number, not the word. Hopefully we'll be back tomorrow night to talk about all the games we previewed here. For now, though, Dave, if people want to follow you on Twitter and find more of your work and face, where should they go?
So on Twitter, search in LOZCAST. And
lovely.
follow that account. It's a wonderful account. But I'll go on to Dave Talks and check out my Mourinho video. I'm closing in on 10,000 views on that video, which for me is bloody incredible.
That thumbnail, though. Lovely
yeah,
work, Dave.
That's it, man. That's all it was. The fun there. Changed it. Adam, what about you, mate? Where do we find you on Twitter?
Follow me on Twitter at Adam Bolt with B-O-U-L-T Wood. You can also find me on the Football Republic. As I said, I will be hosting TFR Live tomorrow with the main man, Lawrence McKenna. So if you missed him tonight, you can catch his face there. I just want to finish on the fact, Dave, to remind you of our little bet that we had going about Germany.
what are you on about, man?
You said that Mario Gomez would start. He didn't start, mate. It was Gertz right from full sign, as I've said. I'm thinking about my Nando's order already. I'm excited. I think I'm going to cash it in when we do TFR Live on Thursday evening.
Okay.
Double chicken burger.
Yeah.
Rice, peas, yeah. Halloumi. I want everything. I want all
okay.
the trimmings.
Mate, yeah, it's absolutely fine. That's fine with me, mate. You know, I'm a man. I stick by my word.
A man of his word. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So I'm on the front three.